We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Christopher Bedford, senior editor at the Federalist, also co-founder over at RightForge. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
It's wonderful to be here. It's good to be out of the rain.
Yeah, Chris got rained on bigly.
Well, you locked the door.
No, let's not talk about this. But it is summer, and that means here in D.C. we get those, like, tropical afternoon storms that can actually be sort of refreshing. So this is kind of welcome, actually.
They're excellent, unless you've got a softball game planned.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Also, I welcome the sky just opening up and ruining your day, any day. That said, it's been, I think, a somber year for many reasons, and particularly felt the last few weeks. But while we focus on the big picture issues, the deadlock in Congress doesn't mean that no attention needs to be paid to Congress, and we certainly cover what happens on the Hill as often as we can, and we wanted to sort of do an update on what to expect from the rest of this year, because it is an election year, because Democrats, I think, Chris, you may or may not agree with this, have recognized that they're probably in trouble in November, and are grasping at straws to pass some part of the agenda that they have not been able to pass since that big infrastructure bill, and might be looking to take some action going forward. What do you think? What do you think we can expect? I know you literally just got off the phone with a Good Hill source. What do we see coming down the pipeline here?
Well, it's not much that's going to pass, and I don't think Democrats are particularly interested in passing that many things. They're Republicans, Democrats are obviously more opposed to each other right now than they're at each other's throats. There actually is talk on the Hill again of some kind of bipartisan, you know, quote, common sense gun legislation. There's a bunch of Republicans who'd be eager to jump on that. But I mean, I was just at lunch with a bunch of Good Hill veterans talking to them, and it's Lucy in the football was what one guy said. Just every time there's some kind of awful shooting, Democrats come to the table and say, all right, guys, I know that we have some disagreements, but we're really serious this time. It's not just about virtue signaling and attacking you. Let's try to do something. Let's try to solve something we can all agree on. And every time it gets crazy. I mean, we were talking about this in the Federalist listserv today, but you have the Democratic congressman.
We do not have a listserv. Chris, the first rule of the listserv is you can't talk about the listserv.
Sorry, it's a text message chain.
No, it's fine.
The Democrat from New York, what was his name, saying, if you don't do this, then we will abolish the filibuster. If you try to stop us from abolishing the filibuster, we will stack the Supreme Court.
Yes.
There's nothing that we're going to do to stop this. So that doesn't really sound like the language of compromise. It's the kind of thing that makes me think that they will not be able to get a deal with Republicans on that one, at least.
You said this last week, and because people, I think, may have picked up so far the fact that we record these on the same day of the week each week, it just to make sure that people realize you aren't having lunches with Hill staffers every single day of the week. Because otherwise it sounds like you always come to the podcast and you're like, well, I just had lunch with a...
I mean, when I used to work in D.C. at the Caller, I was having lunch with Hill staffers and reporters like every single day.
Right, but now you're really bad at your job.
Now that I'm not in the office every day, well, I'll tell you what, it's been good to drop the 2 IPA at lunch habit every single day.
But, you know, one day a week.
Probably 1 or 2 days a week. I'll meet somebody for lunch, but usually on Thursday. I mean,
better
I think
two
the only
is than two martinis.
That's true. You know, the 3-martini lunch though is kind of a myth in some ways. It's, I mean, people did get drinking heavily.
You brought this beer though to the podcast that I think it's fantastic. I've only ever had it when you've bought it.
Cluster Index.
It's so good. The last time I had it though, I had it though. I'm pretty sure I got COVID from recording the podcast in proximity to you.
So well, yeah, COVID's not real. Don't cuck. Yeah, it's a good Bavarian Hell's.
You tested positive for COVID.
But the old martinis, before we get back to the business of what's going on in D.C.
Sorry, everyone.
The old martinis were much smaller. Like, yeah. the goblets of booze, it's like the chillification or the TGI Fridaysification of the martini is a 90s thing, 80s and 90s. And the 70s and 60s martinis are much smaller. But still, I got news to you, even if they're 1-ounce martinis, having 3 of them at lunch... Those are the good old days. those days are gone a little bit. So what we were just talking about on the phone is I think The game in town right now, and I'm not alone in thinking this, is antitrust bills.
Mm-hmm.
The tech bills that are moving their way through Congress and through the Senate, particularly the American Innovation Act, that one that's come out, it's got bipartisan support. I think that's where we should be looking right now for the possible action. And, you know, it's important. Basically, the think tanks are kind of moving around to being united on it. We'll still see what happens.
Mm.
Every single congressman and senator's constituents, Democrats or Republicans, are concerned about what big tech is doing. Basically, I mean, we got to a point where one of the corporate reporters in D.C. a week or two ago sent out a tweet asking, serious question, is there anyone in D.C. who's opposing this bill who's not in some way on the payroll
mm-hmm.
of these companies?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is kind of no. I mean, maybe probably Charles like Koch.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Koch probably opposes the bill, but he's not in D.C. and he's not on those. He's obviously not in the payroll of big tech. I mean, that's where I think people should be watching.
Yeah, I overheard your conversation with the source who definitely knows what he's talking about. I'm sorry, what they're talking about. And that's not a trans joke. It's a identity joke.
But it wasn't a good one, especially if you have to explain it.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But I heard something interesting, which was nobody wants to be seen as voting with big tech. And that's a powerful force in these types of battles that, like, so Amy Klobuchar is somebody who's been doing this from the left. And the left and the right's concerns about tech are very different. And
that's true.
You can never gloss over that, because what they want to do is cut down on the power of both want to cut down on the power of tech. But what they want to do is cut down on the power of tech so that government has more power over speech.
Wants to control tech.
They want to control speech on tech, and the right wants to neutralize speech on tech. And those are ultimately
their
goals.
There's even a mix
goals.
There where you've got guys who are out there on the right who want to destroy the ring of power, and there are some other people who probably want to wield it.
Yeah.
Democrats are typically, except for some of the hard left folks, want to wield the ring, hold the ring and put it on. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the list of co-sponsors of the American Innovation Internet Choice Act, you've got, you know, the ranking member, Chuck Grassley, you've got Klobuchar, you've got Lindsey Graham, Durbin. It's just an interesting mix. John Kennedy, Cory Booker, Cynthia Lummis, Mazie Hirono,
mm-hmm.
Mark Warner, Josh Hawley, Steve Daines, Sheldon Whitehouse. Those are just the original co-sponsors of this bill from last October. Now, here's an interesting point that was made to me recently about, well, you know, first let's talk about what this act does.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask you to explain.
I mean, to put it more broadly, it's an antitrust bill.
Right.
It's one that uses the legislature as opposed to simply the power of the executive branch to go at some of these acts. It goes at some of their, and what the act calls anti-competitive principles, favoring their own products, for example. So here's an example is if you go on Amazon. Amazon is going to put their own products above all others.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, Amazon is going to use your search data and other people's buying habits, mine that data and make products underprice their competition based on what people are buying and then advertise it higher.
Right.
Like they're actually let's say you're selling pens on Amazon. Well, they're going to mine all of your customers to figure out how to make your product cheaper and underbid you and then give that preferential placement.
Right. And because you're selling on Amazon, the company you're selling on makes their own product and can undercut your product on their own platform. Which
exactly. Google favoring YouTube and its search results, which I don't super mind.
Because, I was going to say.
Because it's impossible to watch something on CNN.com or any of these channels because you have to run like 90 seconds of commercials.
Yeah.
Like, just show me the YouTube clip.
I'm so sorry this happens to you.
I hate commercials.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally pay money to big tech companies that I hate sometimes because I hate commercials so much.
I have YouTube Premium. Because it saves me so much time. It's so nice to click on a YouTube video and not have an ad that's like 20 times the volume you thought it was going to be selling you some sort of like fat burning tea.
That's not what they advertised to me.
I was gonna say probably not.
Maybe they should.
It also depends on the videos you click on. If you're clicking on Kardashian videos, you're probably gonna get different results. So that's there again, the concerns are different, but I think on that antitrust question, like with bills like this, where you look at the bipartisan sponsorships, they're getting at the question in the same way, because what they're trying to do is transfer some of the power that tech has wrested into its private hands back into public hands. And the people who disagree with that the most are it's a similar camp of those who defend Section 230. And I actually don't think Section 230 is the catch-all solution to this. Some people disagree with that.
Section 230 is complicated because Section 230 is definitely complicated. There, I think there is some points to be made about whether or not that also protects the little guys and as well as the big guys. But to your point with all these different people, you got Ken Buck coming here from like the more kind of like Republican, yep. maybe a little more established, but you've got all the MAGA Republicans who are coming at this. You've got Hakeem Jeffries, who's neither MAGA nor Republican, kind of his own special person. All of these, so that there's a lot of movement here in Washington, D.C. on exactly how they're going to deal with big tech. And here's what's interesting about what they have, this timeline right now. People are like, why now? Well, now is kind of the only time to do it, because Democrats are in control and they can peel off enough Republicans. Our guy we're just talking to guessed a minimum of maybe 15 Republican senators, maybe 30 conservatively Republicans in the House, but I think it could probably be much higher.
I would think those would be higher.
I think it will get a lot higher once action starts to happen. Once people see, I mean, people in D.C. love to jump on a winning team.
Well, and that gets to the point of nobody wants to be seen as voting with big tech. It's a political loser right now to the maximum. And that's been an important cultural shift in the last 5 years that creates incentives for politicians. And it may feel like it's taken a really long time to at least get to a point where there's an incentive in Washington, D.C. to rein in the power of big tech. But that incentive now is loud and clear. It's there.
So it's awful. I mean, I'm very good friends with a guy who does outreach for one of the big tech companies. And he went from having the coolest job in town
yeah, right?
to being absolutely miserable.
Right?
It's just so tough to, you go from like everyone wants to be at your booth, everyone wants to come to your party.
Remember
to,
those CPAC
everyone's
parties?
Blaming you for every election problem they've ever had.
Yeah.
Everyone's mad at you. They think that you've censored them, and sometimes you have. But one of the reasons this needs to, so the Californians are typically against this. Big tech is massively against this. And it's easy to kind of spook and freak out Twitter and Facebook. And it's even kind of not that difficult to see Google running around with its hair on fire in D.C. But it's super weird to see Amazon freaked out. They usually maintain they're much more cool.
Really?
Yeah, they're.
I disagree.
I think they're definitely one of the places that don't freak out with the lobbying aspects until this bill. But now they're threatening the end of Prime.
Well, they don't have as many speech concerns because they're not like a social media platform, yeah. although they are a web service. But I feel like with labor disputes, they lose their minds.
Well, maybe it's some of the labor disputes. I guess more on the tech aspect
on the tech
I'm talking
side,
about.
Yeah.
They're freaking out, which one observer was talking with this morning said he thinks that they actually look at this as an existential threat,
mm-hmm.
something that's actually a danger to them and
yeah.
their business model, because Amazon has basically become the most successful company on the planet by screwing every single one in America and giving us convenience in exchange.
Small sellers, yeah.
Guilty. I mean, I'm good. So they actually are totally panicked about this. But there is a timeline on it. The Republicans, if we get Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House from California,
right.
we're not going to get this brought up again.
But you
Mitch
know,
McConnell and the Republicans are not going to want to bring this up again. And even more than that, Democrats are not going to help Republicans, even a minority, pass any bills when they're like Democrats are in the minority. They lock ranks,
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to hand any wins. So. The time to do it is now, with Republican turncoats from the old-fashioned pro-business side, and Republican guys who are more concerned about big tech, with Democrats.
All right, I have some good news for everyone who's tired of buying from companies that don't share your values and, in fact, in many cases, hate your values. I know that's pretty much everyone. If you're tired of buying from these large, woke international corporations, think like Coca-Cola and Starbucks, who sell you carbonated sugar water and overpriced coffee, the good news is that there is an alternative. You can throw a tea party. Gold River Trading Company is an American company that offers premium alternatives for Americans who enjoy a delicious cup of tea. Cool down with a pitcher of Gold River Trading Company's crisp and refreshing iced tea. Start your day with Gold River's invigorating 1776 American Breakfast Blend, or unwind with chamomile herbal tea. Explore a variety of high-quality blends and enjoy a healthy, flavorful alternative from an American company that shares your values. Blended and packed in the USA, you can support American workers and American manufacturing by shopping at Gold River Trading Company. Gold River is pro-freedom, pro-America, Christian, and anti-cancel culture. So go to goldriverco.com and save 10% off all orders using our discount code Federalist at checkout. So here's an interesting point. When you were talking about Kevin McCarthy, I thought you were going in a different direction, admittedly, because Kevin McCarthy's arc on tech, again, he's from California. He's had great relationships with a lot of these very wealthy barons of Silicon Valley. But the way he talks about tech is just like pretty much any other MAGA Republican. He talks a good game against tech, but if you Speaker of the House, you control the purse strings, you control the agenda. What do you think happens in a Republican Congress?
I don't think they're not going to do anything on tech. I mean, maybe Section 230 reform, maybe. He's that. So Kevin McCarthy is a friend of tech, but he also knows what time it is.
Right.
He's very good, unlike some maybe like John Boehner and other people, and Paul Ryan especially, at actually getting where the electorate is and what his politicians need to be talking about. So he's not going to shut it down. But the Democrats are not going to help. And the Republican pro-business interests together will kill it. I just don't think it will be a winning issue for him to be able to get through on entirely Republican backs. And you do kind of want this to be bipartisan. I mean,
I think
it's
such
a major step, such a major aspect of it. So I don't see McCarthy. And I certainly don't see the Republican controlled Senate. I'm a slim majority because the Senate map is so tough that even though there's a massive red wave coming by all guesses and observations, there's still not going to be a massive year for Republicans in the Senate at all. And if the Democrats don't help, then, I mean, that just evaporates it.
Mm-hmm. There are court cases making their way. There are cases making their way through the court system, particularly as it pertains to state laws. Ohio, Florida, Texas are the big ones.
Well, Texas just got suspended this week.
Right.
Or it got put on hold.
You want to fill us in on that?
Yeah. The Texas law is one that would basically bar viewpoint discrimination on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And the tech companies basically said, if you bar viewpoint, just if you don't let us discriminate against viewpoints, then there will be more school shootings.
And the judge said,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of wild. Actually, the Supreme Court said this, put it on hold. I mean, and it's a wild reading. I mean, let me pull up ask me a question or something up, or I pull up the actual bench of who voted where so I don't misspeak.
Well, basically what I'm getting to is that Congress can take major actions. There's no question about it. But so much of this should be in Congress's hands, and instead it's in the hands of the bureaucracies, and rightfully in the hands of states. So the states should be taking all these steps, and they are, I think, probably in a fairly bipartisan fashion too. And on the other hand, though, you know, Congress can do X, Y, and Z, but without a president who meaningfully intends to reform tech policy in the White House. And Biden, to his credit, has appointed, you know, like Lena Khan, who's very controversial on the right. Some people really, like our friend Rachel Bovard, really like that Lena Khan's at the FTC. Other people are just appalled that people like Rachel support Lena Khan. And it's been sort
Rachel
of...
Rachel is one of my favorite people of all time.
Yes.
But she's not popular with DC tech establishment because she whips bombs at them and says they're full of it and they're all corrupt.
Right.
And they don't like that.
Right.
So I'm just looking at this ruling right now. This is an interesting just kind of look at how these things break down. Why you have Ken Buck and Hakeem Jeffries and Josh Hawley and Klobuchar on the same bills, which is the majority was John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, Stephen Breyer, and Sonia Sotomayor. And the dissent was Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Elena Kagan. Mm-hmm. Figure that out. It's kind of wild to have this. how these barriers are breaking down. And it's just, it's, I think it's partially indicative of the change in American, where the actual parties really stand these days.
I was going to ask you what you made of Kagan joining that coalition in particular, but also what you think, how you think some of these cases are going to fare. I mean, that's the other frustrating thing is, like, these take years to wind their way through the court system, and it's very different than what happens in Congress or the executive branch, where Biden can do things, or any president can do things with a flick of a pen, whether that's for better or worse, most of the time for worse. But where do you think these state laws go? Is this disincentivizing other Republican governors and legislatures from taking this on?
No, I don't think it is. And full disclosure here, I'm not one of those reporters and writers who just makes things up that often. Sometimes I do. But mostly I have to talk to much smarter people than myself and then just kind of repeat what they said.
Full disclosure, you're a tech executive.
And I haven't talked to any of the Supreme Court reporters who I always hit up for these kind of things. Some great folks like Kevin Daley over at the Free Beacon.
Literally one of my favorite people. I know who you're talking about.
but I think one of the Supreme Court decisions shows that just the breakdown and how these ideologies and how the traditional right and left, as we understood them, and as the Senate questioned these judges on abortion or things like that don't actually apply to this new set of antitrust. I mean, we're doing trust busting in the way that we haven't done in a long time in this country.
Right.
They weren't questioned on that. We don't really have their ideas on it. So it's interesting to see that shake out. Maybe a couple courts like in Florida and then in Texas blocking these laws will disincentivize. But the reason I might be optimistic, there's two reasons I think they won't disincentivize them. One, the Texas abortion law. I mean, and what we've seen spread across the country, the idea that finally, after decades and decades and decades of legal tinkering, we found a way to get past the courts a law that puts an end or at least severely curtails the slaughter of children in the womb in a way that's constitutionally acceptable. It's like, at first you don't succeed, try and try again. This is the result of a 50-year judicial experiment finally making moves. I mean, 2 years ago after Bostock, the feeling in D.C. was among social conservatives was apoplectic. Like, this is a lie. We have been lied to. Mm-hmm. All these different legal institutes that have built the Republican majority and all these Mitch McConnells have done this. They've been putting forward these people. They claim they're going to help us on pro-life, but really they just help on campaign finance reform or corporate garbage. And I think largely a lot of that criticism still stands. But there were people who were working on this the entire time, who were tinkering with it, and they were able to figure it out, people who never gave up. So we have that example ahead of us. Now, regulating big tech, especially at the state level, is a super new place to be. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be error. There's going to be trial, and there's going to be error while they figure this out. And the second reason I think it's still going to continue is because if you talk to people at Thanksgiving or at Christmas, or you would convene a table, forget about it, of policy people and comms people or congressmen and senators here in D.C., but all the way back to home, big tech comes up in conversation all the time. Left and right are super animated about this. They're all angry, which is why big tech smells its own blood in the water and is pumping cash out as fast as it can. So the combination of we have good examples of, oh, don't just take your ball and go home because you lost the case, and your constituents want it. Well, those are good bearings for what's going to come next. The negative aspect is the people who don't get it, the people who really don't understand, are the politicians here in Washington, D.C., largely.
And it's not just them, though. Like, let me take a victory lap on behalf of the Federalist quickly. I remember.
Do it.
Yeah. So I think this was 3 years ago. Pretty sure 3 years ago, which is not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. David French wrote a column, he was at National Review at the time, about how Republican voters don't care about big tech. And I saw that. He was basically saying this is not a winning issue.
So you must have saw that and been like, so it must be a winning issue.
Well, so what he was saying,
that's a David French rule, right?
It's really interesting, actually, to think back on this, because what he was saying is that it's just something the online right, the Twitter conservatives, can care about. Like, it is a MAGA Twitter concern, big tech. It has not penetrated the sort of priorities, the list of priorities at the average American dinner table. And that's interesting because at once it's trying to sort of undermine a narrative that has congealed. But at the other hand, it is so completely out of touch and off base. And I remember writing at the time, that's basically insane. I found polls that showed otherwise and just wrote a story about it. And I really think this, Chris, like the beauty of the Federalist, I don't know that there's, you've been around longer than I have, but there's not a lot of other places in media, especially here in DC, where even when conservative pundits are trying to buck conventional wisdom, this is not a me thing. It's just like everyone at the Federalist at the time was like, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. But because we're not just based in DC, we just have a way better pulse. We have a way better feel for the pulse of the country.
Yeah. I think people who are based in Washington, DC think it's all going to be fine, much more so than.
And David Frank, by the way, I think is based in Tennessee, but maybe his mind is based in New York.
No. His problem is that he's just stupid.
Well, he wants, I think he has put himself in his own sort of, he writes a lot against putting yourself in bubbles, but I feel like when there's that feedback loop, you end up in a bubble.
He's just broken. I mean, obviously once a pretty intelligent person, by all accounts, a nice man, but completely broken.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even believe the nice man stuff, since I don't think nice people spend their weekends dumping on the most attacked group in America, Christians.
Yeah, there's that too. That is a good point. My interactions with him have always been pleasant.
So even if he was correct, which I don't think he was at the time, a lot has happened to really change things in the 3 years since. I mean, the President of the United States was deplatformed by Amazon Web Services, which was the birth of my company.
I refuse to believe that, though. Like, let me just... Yes, a lot of things have changed since. You're right.
At the time, it was still a big issue.
It was terrible.
But even just playing devil's advocate, that's happened.
Yeah.
The Twitter, Facebook, Google came together and said, or not Google, Twitter and Facebook came together and said, we're not publishing these, or we're banning the Hunter Biden laptop story as disinformation based on a total lie. Google's been much more explicit on these things. You've got word processors that are changing your words and recommending new ones. Big tech, I mean, I think that 3 years ago, there was certainly an animated debate and one that was going on and was moving a lot of people. I don't know how many people were voting on it, but they were certainly moving people and angering people. I mean, now big tech having a real side in these issues is not up for debate. It's commonly known. It's like how, if you can think all the way back to like 2014, you would have arguments with aunts and uncles. There's no bias in the media. Like you would. You don't have to have that argument anymore. They just say, well, you guys are bad.
Right.
Fine. But at least we've moved beyond, since the age of Trump, we've moved beyond the complete fraudulent claim that there's no bias in media.
Right.
And I think the same is probably true in the last 3 years, where it was an animating issue that moved people, not as much as some other aspects, but it was something that moved people. The last 3 years is no longer an argument of, does big tech have a side? Of course it does. It's like obvious now.
So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that six-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also, the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those six-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotiony feel either. Every set comes with 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. So you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 1-year limited warranty. Those roll and go anywhere MyPillows. You can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to take on vacation or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at mypillow.com/Federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting mypillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. MyPillow.com/Federalist. You said something interesting also last week.
I say many interesting things.
You're full, a font of wisdom.
I'm glad when you remind me because I actually don't remember anything I said like 30 seconds after I said it.
Yeah, it's a side effect of age. But you said that this was also after a lunch where you had met with some good sources, and they are good sources, that there was a sentiment Democrats are the ones, so the line went, that would really be the obstacle to any type of bipartisan gun legislation because they come to the table in bad faith. And that's an interesting point for the rest of the rest of this midterm cycle, because I actually really do. There's this idea that because Democrats feel as though they haven't passed much other than that Build Back Better bill, that they just haven't done anything under the Biden administration. They've had control of both houses of Congress, and they passed Build Back Better, that they promised to pass another infrastructure deal that had the full human infrastructure agenda. That seems to have failed. Now, there's some indications that it's happening behind closed doors with Chuck Schumer, Joe Manchin, and the White House. And I am still very skeptical that anything will get passed unless it is a super, super skinny bill that they try to pitch as something bigger. But I think they realize they're in big trouble, that they need to do something. And so they're going to try. But even on guns, they are sort of kneecapping themselves, are they not, by hardening. So having this extremely hardened exterior here in Washington in their base that, like, they cannot work with, they cannot meet Republicans on the middle in anything anymore.
And they're not going to want to. I mean, their base doesn't want to. And I kind of wonder if it's similar to the way Republicans treated abortion for so long, which is they would say, we're going to stop abortion, we're going to stop abortion, we're going to go to Washington, D.C. They get elected, and they'd be like, well, it's the law of the land. And, you know, there's just realities of elections, and Democrats won't do this with me. Mm-hmm. And there's a million freaking excuses. And every year they try to count on that vote anyways, because they're the only ones who even paid lip service to that. So maybe there's a little bit of that with Democrats. But I also think the Democrats are on the completely, I think most of our listeners probably agree, the completely wrong path. And they're not going to change course based on some kind of 2014 shellacking or some kind of 2010. I hate that word. Yeah. And I hate how many times we use it. Some 2010
Obama.
Red
Thanks,
Wave
Obama.
Tea Party thing. That's not going to change them. I'm wondering, I mean, I think what it's going to take is like a Reagan re-election, just absolutely crushing, dominating defeat, like massive red wave this next election. But then in the presidential year, too, again, just boom. And that worked on realigning Democrats. I mean, Bill Clinton was realigned. He said, well, heck to you, heck to all of your ideas, heck to this. I'm going to work with Republicans. I'm going to work with Speaker Gingrich and others, and we're going to change course because of the message that we've gotten. I think Art Laffer says, I love principled conservatives and unprincipled liberals because I can work with both.
That's such a good Lafferism.
Yeah, he's got some great ones.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, if that's going to happen. I mean, They pretended to learn a lesson from what happened in 2016, and they didn't learn anything. All they, I mean, I think if they got beat 80-20, they'd be like, well, I had no idea that 80% of the country were Nazis. It's
like, why are you doing like a Southern accent?
That's just my liberal accent. I have no idea.
That sounded a little sort of genteel.
Oh, well, it's not. It's supposed to be my limp-wristed accent. Somebody slap the conservatives.
Well, we're both Yankees, so we can say that those two are the same thing. We're kidding.
I'm a bit of a Yankee. I'll be in Boston tomorrow. I can't wait.
You're a bit of a Yankee. You sound like Ben Affleck. And you pound Dunkin' and pound people in bar fights.
I freaking love Dunkin' Donuts.
Chris, the...
I'm sweating, by the way. This room's too hot.
Oh, my gosh. This is just...
This room is too hot.
The most... I will... We can't have noise from...
I know. I just want people to know that we suffer for the audio quality.
You suffer. I'm fine. Women do not suffer. We have a different body temperature.
Imagine your house if it was as hot as the women in your life always wanted it to be. That's the level of suffering.
The air conditioning is set to 67 degrees, and I didn't even turn it off for the podcast, which is why people will hear slight humming noise in the background.
My goodness.
It's not exactly NPR here at Federalist Radio Hour. Chris just took a swig of his pint. Just sweaty, drinking a pint of beer in a 80-degree sweatbox.
Story of my life.
Yeah, sorry, man. So let's wrap up on this broader point, though, about Congress can do X, Y, and Z. Whether they do anything on guns, whether they do anything on tech, and I am so deeply skeptical that they will do anything on both, even as desperate as Democrats are, because I actually think the left has warped, and the kind of political establishment has warped the incentive system so much that cooperation, even on things like antitrust, is difficult at best.
I think it is, but what I mean, here's an interesting thing that I heard today, getting some straight shot at the lunch. I was talking to one guy. I said, well, what do you think about this? What, he's an editor in town. What do you think? Where do you think this is? Where is it going to go? He's like, well, I'm just confused. What's happening? Why are there senators who are pulling off of this? Why did Hassan pull off of this bill? Mm-hmm. And then talking to one of the guys who's behind the bill, I'm like, all right, so what's the deal? Why are people pulling off? He goes, well, they're not. We never really had that senator. Mm. But DC moves on momentum in a lot of ways. People want to be on a winning team. People want to, they don't want to, there's a couple people who are perfectly happy, the Mints, the Cruises, the Lees, to wave a flag and charge the enemy by themselves. But most people just kind of want to be on the winning team.
Right.
So this is an interesting push by big tech. I think it's coming from their lobbyists, that's my suspicion, to get political reporters to start talking about defections. Mm-hmm. Even if those people were never, ever on your team. Like, I remember we had an intern back in the day at Young Americans for Freedom. I think all we ever did with him was like drive around, like buy a pack of cigarettes and write a press release. It was like, well, he's there for one day. The kid resigned. He went to RT and he gave this whole speech about why he resigned Young Americans for Freedom. I was like, I'm like, who the hell were you?
I was getting so scared about where this story was going, and I was vindicated.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like we attacked Ron Paul or something, and he's like, well, they don't stand with my principles. I'm like, you were an intern for one day. So I kind of wonder if that's what they're doing, when they're trying to create this narrative, these big tech guys, that there are defections. Now, in order to get this passed, the pro-antitrust side needs to get regulation in the other direction. So Heritage Foundation, if you're listening, jump in on this fight. I mean, they've been doing great work. Heritage is doing great work under Kevin Roberts the last couple weeks on fighting back on tech.
And he's really good on this.
I was really skeptical of the possibility that Heritage could be turned around. I'm changing my mind pretty quickly based on some of the stuff they're doing.
It's like the Titanic being turned around, by the way, and that's how amazing I think it is. And it's yet to be determined.
Turning the Titanic wasn't difficult. It was stopping it from sinking once its last compartment had been breached.
Okay. You are weirdly a Titanic historian.
It's a super interesting story.
But it is, if you just sort of grant me the metaphor, it is like that. But because I think the sort of infrastructure, there's so many people at Heritage who understand, the staff understands, a lot of people on the staff understand where the priorities sort of need to be, that as soon as you had, you know, Kevin Roberts step in and just aggressively start thinking about these things, it's a good direction to be going in.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people there who were just kind of just wallowing and be like, I wish I could do more. Well, now you can.
Yep.
Okay, do it.
Well, and this sort of goes to the last point that I think we should just hit on, which is public sentiment and the actions that we all take in our individual lives, whether it's in regards to big tech or, you know, violence in our communities. We do rely a lot on the government because in the past 100 plus years, the administrative state has bloated both on national and state levels, depending where you live, to the point where we just have this reflexive dependence on the state to step in here and there and there.
And the fact that a federal funding is withdrawn because you don't let boys into little girls' locker rooms at elementary school, that 30 million kids could go hungry without lunch. Well, that means there's too much federal funding in their schools.
Well, yeah, and listen, don't rely on Congress. Congress should do, they should sort of tend to the gardens of the free market, right? Like, they should push back on cronyism, and every lever in the government that is reasonably empowered to do so should fight cronyism, and they should tend to the weeds of our sort of capitalist garden, and the weeds are monopolies. But that said, don't rely on them anymore to create these speech institutions or these social media institutions that respect our sort of tradition of free speech. Don't do it. It's not going to happen. Don't let your kid use social media if it's only going to promote a certain narrative and certain viewpoint on some of these issues.
And don't give your kid a cell phone.
Don't give your kid a cell phone.
those give you access to the darkest and most awful aspects of humanity.
And if
just with a quick browser.
And if you see somebody, I mean, suicide rates in so many communities have just skyrocketed. And the sad thing is there are actually antitrust in social media. The fact that there isn't competition in some of these social media platforms is why they don't adapt to like actually meaningfully push back on the ways these things really hurt young people, because there isn't competition. You can't just go to the version of Instagram that is more healthy for you. You can't do it. No matter what the libertarians say, it doesn't exist. The same. This is literally what you work on at RightForge. You can't just do that right now. And so rather than expecting Congress to take care of that, you know, if you see people that are struggling in your communities, reach out and don't, that hesitance that might have, that you may have indulged in the past, that's beyond time to resist that. And that's just sort of me. That's almost like a cathartic thing to say, but yes.
Yeah. I'm into that.
Chris Bedford. Wow, we ended on like a serious note.
Hey, but hey, maybe antitrust will pass.
Maybe
antitrust will pass. Hey, left a beer to that.
Hey, well, we don't have any beer left.
And help your neighbors. Well, it looks like the sun's come back out, so we can send the interns another beer run.
Oh, good. Yeah. Christopher Bedford, senior editor at The Federalist, also co-founder of RightForge. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another edition of The Federalist Radio Hour. We will be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray. The laws that you bore today.